Welcome to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast. Yes, it's 100% unscripted, 100% unrehearsed, 100% unedited, and 100% real. I'm your host, Mark A. Preston. Today's guest, I'd like them to introduce themselves, just so I don't mess up. Hello.
Hi, Mark. Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I'm Erica, by the way, for everyone who's tuning in. Right. I can introduce myself properly as well.
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I'm Erica Varangoli. I'm the, as of last month, former head of SEO branding at Semrush. And prior to that, director of organic search and head of international brand at Semrush. I was there for 4 years. And I'm mainly, I would say, content marketing and branding, brand marketing expert. But obviously, I've worked a lot around SEO strategy, communication strategy. So yeah, I've done a few things. And before Semrush, I was mostly agency side. So I was working with small and big clients and a few times at startups, but that only lasted so long. So I see you laughing. So yeah, I'm transitioning now into something new. But yeah, thank you for inviting me, Mark.
Wonderful. Well, I ask everybody this just so we can get a sense of where you've come from and your journey. So could you explain for the people listening and watching who doesn't really know much about you, how when it was you started in the industry, what happened at that time, and the journey from there to sort of now like a whirlwind tour?
Ooh, I'm a bit old, so I don't want to bore people with everything, but it's been, I feel like many of us doing, you know, working in SEO and content marketing come from very different backgrounds. My background was in journalism. So I started as a journalist and editor for large publications. I also have to say I'm from Greece. So all of that was in a previous lifetime back in Greece. And how I came into SEO and content marketing was, back in 2012, I decided to move to the UK because A, I could see where press was going, and B, back then in Greece, things were not going so great. So I really wanted, I was thinking, what is this online marketing people are talking about? You know, I was working at publications and they were very slowly transitioning to online. So I was like, ooh, we need to be on Facebook. This looks amazing. Or we need to be on Twitter. And everyone was like, you're wasting your time. Just leave us alone. Do whatever you want. But I was finding that quite interesting how our audiences interacted there versus, you know, just printing something or just teasing at it online and not giving them the full thing. So I moved to the UK and I, you know, intentionally not chase any jobs in you know, journalism or press. And I managed to convince some people at an agency to hire me as an online marketing executive, which was also fantastic because I got to work on very different clients and very different channels, which was great for me as a start, right? I got to really see different channels and things and scale depending on the size of the clients. And then, I'm not going to bore you much more, but from then on, I sort of combined what I saw in that first role with my background and experience. Like that was back in 2012, 2013. And I got bored of seeing like content is king everywhere. But that also demonstrated something like, you know, Google at that point was really transitioning into being that search engine where online publishers could do well, you know. So my background in content, working on content marketing and SEO, like SEO fascinated me, like that organic growth, right? So yeah, my next roles were all about like content marketing, SEO strategy. I was working with some amazing people at agencies, you know, technical SEOs, but also design, creative campaign teams, digital PR. And I was very lucky. And then fast forward to 2020, Semrush reached out to me, which at that time, it was the platform that I was a big advocate for at the agencies I was working at. So I was even known at an agency as the SEMrush crazy person, because everything everyone asked me, I was like, well, did you know you can do that with SEMrush? So yeah, that's how my journey at SEMrush started. And I went through a few roles there and a few different challenges, like good challenges. That's why I took on these roles and the company trusted me as well. Starting with global content strategy for the website, then organic search, and then international brand and SEO branding.
Wonderful.
That was a very long intro. Sorry.
No, it's fascinating. Because without that intro, I wouldn't have had an insight into who you are, really. And
yes.
I really want to get into, you know, your background in journalism. Do you think that's really helped you progress in this industry?
Yes, absolutely. And for many, many years since I started in online marketing, you know, when I was interviewing for the next role, for example, and I was asked like, okay, which ones of your skills are transferable or what did you learn in that job? I always kind of ended with, regardless of all this, I feel that 90% of my skills and experiences are from journalism that I take into this. Like it taught me so many things that are relevant in how Google works, how search works, how audiences engage. And also the discipline it takes to create like really great content. Discipline in quotation marks, because it ranges from abuse to really creative work, but it's like with content, and especially nowadays we see it really amplified, like mediocre, bad content, right? Journalism kind of teaches you really to go deep into audience engagement, into telling a story well, into crafting content that is effective. It's not just, you know, beautiful. It's efficient in what it's trying to do. So yeah, absolutely connected with what I'm doing.
Right. I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but with you having a journalism background, what's your personal thoughts and opinions on the digital PR industry at the moment?
So yes, I've thought about it many times on being on either side. Okay, because even when I was a journalist, I was contacted. It wasn't digital PR there; it was just called PR. but also as a marketer who does this for coverage. So I'll start with a very naive approach, right? And my naive approach to this is that, if for a moment we think beyond links or authority scores and all of this, right? Essentially, what this does is amplifying and growing your brand's reach and your reputation, right? So as someone, let's say I'm managing a company's website or a brand or visibility, doesn't matter how exactly we call it for this purpose, it is up to you to decide, like, where would I want to be featured? And the answer typically would be, I want to be featured on somewhere, you know, where is authoritative, where my audience hangs out, where I can see real benefits in terms of people finding relevant content and then coming to check out who I am if they want to learn more, for example, right? So even years ago when it was like reporting to clients, right, and being in trouble if we didn't get 20 links and we got 15 links, or where those links are, or are they follow or no follow, I sort of felt uncomfortable with those conversations. And because in reality, the real benefit comes from the reputation you build. And for Google, we know this is also building your authority. Now, for media, the landscape shifted drastically when, you know, measurement and success comes from, of course, ads and ad spend, but also success of journalists and writers on media is based on engagements they get on their content, or total views and total shares. So, of course, that creates a different kind of goal for people writing for online publications, right? It's no longer just about the good story, the interesting stories about, but do people engage and share it? So there's a mismatch there sometimes. I feel that also that led a lot to publications no following their links for a while. as well after a while. So for me, the important thing is that, you know, we always say, I think in the industry, best practice and advice is like create great content that people want to mention and link to, right? But this is the thing, like journalists, many times, nine out of 10 of them are like freelancers. They have to pitch their story. They have to get it approved by the editor at the publication or the team. So of course, if it's not interesting, if it's not something they can sell, you will not be very successful. And on the other hand, for journalists picking things to link to, I feel the bar has lowered a bit in terms of how thorough they are with what they pick. So brands as publishers means that more and more companies and brands just publish content or go into campaigns that they feel is, okay, someone should cover that. And in the end, someone may cover it. But in reality, that alignment between the needs of the journalist and the publication and what you can actually do with, you know, the right methodology, the right kind of approach, how is that relevant to you? You can get a lot of viral campaigns. That was the other thing I was listening to a lot. Like, can we make a viral campaign? And I've even experienced the case where something did go viral and the site broke down, so they couldn't take any payments for a while. So so it is having that kind of long-term strategic vision, I think, beyond how many links this month or, you know, the journalists, how many shares on this content. I know it's hard for them right now as well and has been for a while, but it's like, how do you actually build that authority and that relevance to your audience is part of this.
You know what? It just resonates. This is what I've been saying for 23 years. It's like, just stop it. You know, I mean, what's the point in getting your story somewhere published where your audience don't hang out?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just...
It's a shame sometimes. I almost found myself, I know probably all of us at some point are thinking, oh, it would be good to know exactly how the algorithm works and what it counts for how long. But then you're seeing, like, you know, acquiring links, okay, and they're not so relevant, or, you know, they're not based on a campaign that's actually relevant. It's just a bit of fun or a bit of, oh, it can go viral kind of campaign. What are the actual benefits after that? Like, I don't think we can provide a solid insight just because we don't know that in the algorithm. But I have seen, like, getting no follow links from places that are relevant, driving so much traffic, versus getting more links during a month, let's say, for a client, right? That do absolutely nothing on that front. And then at the end of this thought process, you're thinking, okay, SEO, content marketing, right, is a means towards improving a business's bottom line. So this is part of it. It's not irrelevant to that. And the other thing I was discussing recently is, like, your links, your mentions, they're part of your reputation. That kind of old saying, like, you know, any publicity is good publicity. Absolutely not. It's not. So even where you are featured, if it clashes with your audience and their interests, right, I think that should weigh in more than the authority score of a website that may feature you.
Yeah, definitely. And it just reminds me of, I can't remember when, it's quite a few years back. It's like I was running my agency and basically, you know, we had this client and it were never about how many links or whatever. It's all, for me, it's always been about, right, okay, the objective is to generate more leads and then you can turn them into sales. So I literally spent, I think it were two months gaining one single piece in one of the top magazines in their industry. And that one piece, yes, there was a link in it, but that one single piece generated them so much business. They were like, I mean, you know, a box of chocolates arrived and everything. And for me, that's the important thing. It's matching the publication and what you get published and what you say to the actual, you know, purpose.
Yeah. I have, I think, a similar example from way back, that first role I had in the agency. And I was working on a client, and as part of like link building back then, it wasn't such a bad word back then. I was kind of like, okay, every month generate X amount of links. So I remember one particular month I had found a mention, and it was on The Independent, right? And there wasn't a link. So I got in touch with The Independent, got a bit of pushback, but in the end, you know, they landed the link on that article. And I also created a profile for them in a directory that was like an industry directory with sort of link to the website. And then looking into the traffic they got through and what converted, that directory link, which is like, you made it yourself, it's kind of like not a huge authority versus The Independent. Like the client was thrilled about The Independent. It had nothing to do with the actual business value they got out of one versus the other. So that was one of my first learnings, like what shaped this idea as well. Of like, you know, we need to look beyond follow, no follow, which publication, how big it is. Of course it is great. You know, if authoritative media mention you or link to you, great. But how relevant is it? And how do you build your reputation? How do you build your connection with your audience and new audiences through this? It's not just about here's five links this month and this is the authority score of that website.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a certain part of the industry who doesn't go past the links? You know, here you've paid us X amount and we've give you these links, and whatever happens after that, we're taking no responsibility for it.
I imagine it still is. Like, I don't feel, you know, so comfortable to say yes, absolutely, because I've not worked in agencies, for example, for 5 years now. But I do speak with, and I have friends at agencies, and I know for sure that the mindset has shifted a lot, and they're thinking along the right lines, or at least the people I speak with and I like speaking with. I'm sure it still works that way. Like, I also get a lot of the usual emails that everyone gets, but when I was working agency side, I was finding it sometimes really or extremely hard to move the conversation with the paying clients from we want these links, and like links being measured on this is how much we pay you. So therefore, for each link to cost between this and this, which is a market average, we need X amount of links per month. And for me, these are the kinds of conversations that move this kind of work to the wrong basis. It's like it's not about the actual cost of link, and none of us can guarantee the long-term or short-term effect this may have. So people have to be strategic. But I do feel we're gradually changing these conversations, and business owners or, you know, CMOs, people in-house working with agencies are more and more savvy about what matters. Or at least that's what I like to think. But definitely I'm seeing a shift in the past 5 years versus, let's say, when I was starting, right? And those were the days of Penguin, whereas now there's a lot more awareness around, you know, your expertise, your authority. What does this mean? How do you build it? And getting to a more holistic model of what ties into that.
Right. So moving the conversation away from links onto more content. So with your background, how should SEO start thinking about content?
That's a very hard conversation. So I think the first question, there isn't a direct answer. I think the first question is, what stage is the website and the business they're working for, right? Is, you know, is it the kind of small startup just starting now in a very competitive landscape, or is it like an established business, or maybe they have way more resources? One thing I would say applies to every case I've worked on all these years is they definitely should not work in a silo. And for me, that was the case even like 10, 12 years ago. Okay. It almost felt like We're missing out on so much because the social media team is over there and the budget from the client is just for that. Or, you know, we're being paid to create content, so no one needs to talk to design or anyone else. So this is wrong because content, and this is also discussions I've had over the years with people, what is content marketing? Like, you end up kind of like in an inception conversation, which is like, it's everything and nothing all at once. So what is it? So I would say that they should not just think about content in isolation or just under the prism of, you know, SEO. Of course, the social media, Google SERPs are filled with like advice and yeah, you know, do your keyword research, create content for that. If you're small, go for long tail, low competition keywords. And I'm not saying it's wrong. Like, I sound like I'm saying it's wrong. It's not. It's just like, just pause and think. This is what everyone has been telling everyone else to do for such a long time, that question yourself on whether this is a long-term strategy that will get you so far. So I would say really assess where they are now. Be open to, I know we're talking about just SEOs, but I'm talking more about from a business point of view, right? Where is the biggest impact? Where's the biggest growth opportunity? Maybe SEO should not be the first thing you do. Of course, technical, get everything in order there. But then, you know, just expecting that I'll find 100 keywords and create content and that's it. Like, that's my organic visibility sorted. If I don't rank, I just need a bit better content. No, that's probably not it. Or if you've created those 100 pages and you're still not doing great, then you might progress to think, ooh, then I need links, because that's what everyone has been saying for a long time. And it's not that. It proves to be such a hard thing to do. And I think it is harder now. It's not just because of AI. It's because, of course, in the last 10 years, everyone became a publisher and everyone has been doing the same thing. So you have to go all in. You have to really understand your clients. Like, I've been in previous roles, I was theoretically like a content marketing person or an SEO person. And I found myself working way more with sales and business development, because at that point, it felt right for the business to work way more on that front and that content versus just creating 10 more blog posts. So it is hard. But on the other hand, you know, if we think about what does SEO mean, and it's like search engine optimization. Well, nowadays, you know, you don't just show up by having a few pages of content or many pages of content. So you have to branch out. You have to collaborate, be social, and prioritize. I think this is super important, regardless of the size of the business. There's probably 1,000 things you can do to grow your visibility, but you have to be super smart with allocating, prioritizing, and also testing. Because if you don't, I would be wrong. I would have been wrong so many times if I was just given a blank check, you know, say, do whatever you think is right, and didn't listen to my team, for example. Whereas many times we had different opinions, like, this is very important. No, this is more important. And when we were able to test things, we actually found what was important and then scaled. So I would put those three things at the top.
So it's not just writing a topic up and away we go then.
Well, I'll say this, like, I am, obviously I'm a content marketing person. So I am a big advocate for what content does, but not just for Google. What content is the means to attract, engage, convert your audience, right? It comes in so many different shapes, sizes, channels. So I sort of took my career as well to a stage that allowed me to view content from, you know, like an umbrella view, not just, okay, content for ranking and SEO, because I always felt that that was very limiting, right? So topical relevance is very important. If you're doing it also to rank, of course, like, what you're relevant to comes from the content you have, but also from the products you have, what people say about you and your services. So that's what I mean by not looking at it as like, here's 50 keywords, write content for them. Let's see who ranks at the top and write it a bit better, which is also very subjective, by the way. So it's It's way more complex than that, but beautiful, very beautiful.
Yeah. Complex is the word, but for me, I like to strip everything right back, you know, and understand why we're doing these things. You know, we're not doing them to get ranked. We're not doing them to drive organic traffic. We're doing them so the business can push forward and we're helping them to build the brand up, you know, in a positive light. And with your background on brand as well, how do you see brand fitting into the whole SEO?
Okay, you got me started. I was going to say, don't even get me started, but here you go. I always had it on good authority that those two are super connected, to the degree that I was super annoyed in previous roles when we were, for example, I was reporting on success of the program or strategy I was building based on organic non-brand, right? So I always felt that these two are connected. Like at the end of the day, this is your online presence. SEO is not isolated from your presence. If someone Googles your brand, they'll probably find things about you, about your products, what other people say about you. And then again, if they just search for a product or a service and they come across you in the SERPs, if they're interested, what they will look up is you as a business. Are you reliable? Are your products good? So those things are so interconnected that it was, to me, it was a bit hard to explain in the past why, you know, different teams like brand SEO teams would be so siloed. Nowadays, when, first of all, ranking for non-brand searches, right, especially in a very competitive niche, or if you're very new and very small compared to the giant players, but also with how much more interesting people's journeys online are, I feel that you would probably find way more opportunities to grow your business through brand with SEO as well. Versus just, you know, brand sounds very scary and very expensive, by the way, but it isn't. So like content marketing is very expensive. So SEO can be very expensive. So I would say that, you know, going back to the basics of like how people buy, how does marketing work? You have to look into building a brand. You have to look into building a reputation. SEO can be part of that. But you do need to look at the overall image, because at the end of the day, especially with so much competition, I think it's a bit foolish to think that someone will search for, let's say, something that's like long tail, how to fix a bike, okay? And then you rank for that, and then all of a sudden you'll be flooded with requests for, I don't know, tools to fix bikes. It doesn't work like that. Like people form habits over the years as well, like where they buy from, where's the frictionless experience to do that? What do other people say? So you have to be on all of those conversations. You cannot really afford, I think, to just neglect them and say, oh, I'm doing SEO, low difficulty keywords, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I think for me, I've been massive on the whole brand. Integrating brand, because at the end of the day, it's the business reputation and the brand, even down to the directors, you know, and understanding how their customers search and what they search, what they're looking at, you know, all these different things connects for me. It always has done, you know, but there are certain SEOs that would say, well, you know, brand has no impact on organic growth. But for me, I believe it does. What do you think?
Here's the thing. Like, I did try to prove it at some point with a correlation study with a team, but we didn't have enough data to prove it. But, and it would still be a correlation. But here's what I would say. It's not about... what do we mean by impact, right? Like, at the end of the day, there are so many assumptions about how important is it for your brand to be searched for Google to then rank you. And this is still an assumption. Like, neither me nor you nor the other SEOs work at Google, understand or know what's in the algorithm. So again, then it's just personal opinions. I'm starting from a more people perspective, which is like companies, products, services are there to cover a need, right? And the audiences, people are there to find the right service and product for their needs. So to think that marketing works in isolation, like one channel works in isolation from another, just cripples the compound effect that those working together could have, right? And sometimes the synergies are just so simple. Like, you can have, I'm going to use a very daft example. I didn't say the bad word. I'm going to use a very daft example, but just to demonstrate what I mean. You can have like this top funnel content, right? But then to expect that people will convert straight away is kind of like not the case most of the time. But how you connect this content to product content on your website, right? Or things that are relevant, information about your brand, the trust signals in there, like case studies or testimonials from your clients. This ties into how people build brand recollection and brand affinity. It doesn't have to do with just like, okay, they found a piece of content on Google and then they read about it. And if they want, they can read some more somewhere else or not. It has to do with how do you bring your brand in front of mind with every single touch point. So I'm very dubious about, you know, when people say, well, brand on brand is a very different thing. It's not. It's all part of marketing for the same company, the same product. So it shouldn't be. Or how you convert them. Like, one of the things I was precious. I'm not precious about many things, but I was precious about that. It was like when we got to a stage with our SEO strategy at Semrush, right? And it was a case of how do we grow. Part of what I wanted to do really was CRO. It's like, it's not just about how do we get people through. It's like, what do we do with the people that come on our website? What then? What happens then? And I cannot share much, but I can say that it was totally worth it. So this is what I mean by people not over-focusing. I do know how it tends to get sometimes, and it's also part of how different teams get budgets, right? So naturally, everyone wants to be able to report on outcomes of their specific line of work and channel. But on the other hand, like, a simple test would be launch a campaign or a strategy somewhere and then keep adding on channels and collaborations with other channels and teams and then see what that does. Because that would be a great way to vet for yourself as well which channels are the most lucrative, but also where you should be looking at way more than just one channel.
Yeah, totally, totally agree. Now, there's a lot of SEOs that I've spoke to over the years that said, well, you know, once we get people to the website, my job's finished. You know, but for me, I've always started at the end because I want to know before I even do anything if the website's converting, because there's no point me throwing a load of people to the website if it's not converting for some reason. So I want to understand that bit first. Let's get that bit and what you already have working better. So when we do get the right kind of people to the website, we know it's going to convert better. And I think there's a big disconnection there in the industry.
There is. I agree. And that paradigm that you mentioned, right, indicates two things. One is that either that, let's say SEO is over-focused on its own metrics, right? So if, for example, by the way, it drives me nuts as well. Like, I can never sit still and think, okay, my job was to just get traffic from search. That's me done. Because it drove me nuts if nothing happened for the business after that. But it can be an example of teams over-focusing on, you know, we grew our organic traffic by that much, right? So we're successful. But in all honesty, you can do that not pretty easily, but you can do that. It doesn't mean you're driving the right traffic or that that is what the business should be focused. You may not have a demand problem, but you may have a conversion problem, right? And I have used it as examples in the past. It's like, what would you prefer me to do? Grow our traffic 10% or grow our conversion by 1%? And then just leave people to do the math, right? And it wasn't always beneficial to me. It was like, I wasn't going to get more work. Someone else was going to get it. But the idea is that either those metrics and that over-focusing on metrics is what kind of distracts people from what they're actually doing, or that the business, right? So people higher up are not necessarily viewing the long-term strategy and goal in a holistic manner. So again, they're over-focusing on maybe for budget allocation or maybe from, I don't know, benchmarking that has happened somewhere with some data. And so, okay, we should bring this. This is how we grow. We grew like this before. That is another example, which is very familiar. So we should continue to grow in this way moving forward, not taking into account that, you know, you reach maturity levels, markets change, Google may mess up. You know, there's so many things that should change your strategy every now and again. I'm not saying every month, but you should not consider this a given and a repeatable model long term. So yeah, I'm with you, Mark. Like, it always drove me crazy when people were happy just with a nice graph on traffic going up. But then, oh, sales are not going so well, so this is a problem on the sales team. Not necessarily. So yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, a couple of days ago, I got a director of a company contact me and said, Mark, we working with this SEO team, they've done a great job. And basically, the number of people on his website's doubled. You know, they've been doing the work. You know, we're ranking for lots more things. We're gaining traffic, but I'm just not getting the leads. Can you help me? Can you look at it and find out why and what's going on? And I feel I'm personally getting a lot more leads myself for that type of thing. You know, call it conversion rate optimization, whatever you want to call it. The fact is, the business hasn't been ripped off, obviously, because that, you know, but there's something missing. There's something not right there. And for the director, he never said that, you know, the agency has, you know, done a bad job or anything. He just said, I need someone else to come in and have a look why we're not generating the leads. And I think that's, for him, he said, because I might as well not have spent any money and I'd be in the same situation.
Well, here's the thing, and I don't want to play advocate for either side because I do understand the point. But my experience, especially when I was agency side, right, and working with clients and being paid, for example, to grow organic visibility, was that it was a similar situation to links, right? It's like client pays you and tells you, you know, what we want is 50% plus organic traffic. Now, that's a point where I find that a good agency will go in, look into the data, look into the landscape, and say, no, that's not what you need. Like, I've had these conversations in the past as well, also about links, because, you know, this as well, many people will come and say, we want links. We just want you for links. You may have a full agency, you know, the full offering, and say, well, we know what we need. We need links. And then 6 months later, it's like, we see no results from this. We don't want links. We want to stop working with you. So that is a point where I think more agencies need to be, I don't know, more courageous and say, like, we don't think this is what you want, and have a really good counter proposal as to what they want if they feel that the client in the brief is wrong, is not what they really need as a business. Number two is that lag between getting the organic results in terms of ranks or, you know, driving traffic and that traffic converting. This is also another thing I've seen, is like expecting that, okay, we rank, so now, you know, our revenue should double within 3 months. And that's not the case because it depends on the kind of traffic you attract, right? It's very different if you attract traffic to, you know, a page that you've made or a product to convert people or a campaign to convert them versus, you know, just attracting them for how to do X, which is completely brand agnostic at that point, probably. So that education about also like what is the expectation in terms of results and how long they should take, how people buy. It's not like now that 5,000 people more found you, you're going to get 5,000 more payments all of a sudden. And I feel that that is also an educational part that is missing on either side also, because maybe the SEO team should be trying to first tackle other terms versus like top of the funnel. It's all about like, what is the actual benefit we want to gain from this kind of activity?
Yeah, I think when people come to me personally, I want to know why they think they need that.
Yeah.
You know, then we can start delving into it. Because often they don't actually need what they think they need.
Yeah.
They need something else. You know, but obviously there's different types of agencies, and some agencies are productized, you know, and that's fine because they're totally upfront about it. We will do X amount for X amount, and that's what you get. I mean, I'm not against that. That's to do with supply and demand. As long as there's demand out there, there'll be a supplier for it. But for me, I think to really help the businesses, you need to understand the why, not just, you know, take it for granted. Well, I want this. Well, why do you want it? You're going to laugh at me because I've read a study online. And that's what it says the top ranking sites do.
Mm.
So this brings me on to studies online.
Okay.
Right? I know we've spoken briefly about this in the past, but what's your personal opinion on industry studies?
Personally, I love them. I find them extremely interesting. And for me, they are kind of like, you know, those hooks that you read in the publications that is like, ooh, read this, what we found. So initially, I find it interesting. I feel that in our space, data can shed a lot of light into things, right? And it is a fine balance between, you know, opinion and experience and data, but we do need the data. So then I move on to understand like the methodology, because that is very important, right? If the methodology is not right, or, you know, if it's oversold as, you know, I did a study on this, I have the answer on what is the most important thing for Google, and then it's just anecdotal stuff or anything. It may still have some value, but I sort of have that idea of I want to understand the methodology and the scale. And then the way I use them, and I know we first spoke about it together for, you know, thanks to the ranking factor study we did at SEMrush, which is a controversial topic, not the study itself, but the topic itself. And for me, the idea behind it was, okay, let's see about the methodology. Let's see about the volume of data we can process. And then let's be very kind of like, I don't want to say hand-holding, but understanding that the audience that might read it is not necessarily Mark or Erica. It can be a business owner. It can be an intern who, you know, just starts to learn about things. And I didn't want it to become the, okay, this study said that this and this factor is the most important, so this is what we should focus on now. And instead be more about, okay, here's the data, here's what we found. It's correlation, but it can be a good starting point for you, depending on where you work and what you do, to test some hypothesis. And you may find that the findings of the study have nothing to do with what you find in your own work, and this is absolutely fine. Or it may be just the beginning for you and your team to try something out or to pay more attention to something. So I think studies help us hypothesize a bit more, and they also help us get more ideas on where things may be going. Like, I find studies interesting if they reveal, for example, a trend. I was looking at one very recently from Glenn Alsop, for example, for Reddit, right? This has been a conversation for a long time now about Google SERPs and Reddit and whatever. But on the other hand, someone getting their hands on tons of data and sort of giving a clear picture of, okay, how important is it? Because someone may be searching for things and never coming across, well, not never nowadays, but very rarely coming across Reddit. So it is a matter of opinions again. So they do help make a picture a bit clearer in terms of what is happening. And that's as far as I would go. I would never suggest that any study, like maybe medical studies could, but like in our industry, I would never suggest that, you know, read a study, depending on what they find, just go and change or adjust your whole strategy to follow the findings of that study.
I have seen that done in real life previously. I'm not going to mention what study, but it was a while ago, you know, and literally a company come to me and I looked at the website and I immediately understood what study the SEO had read. Mm. And they'd gone about basically changing the whole strategy based on this study, because this study said the top ranking websites all have XYZ in them. But yeah. I think that's partly because there's, for me, it's context. You know, the SEO themselves need to read these studies thinking about the context, right? Because the study might be relating to, well, we looked at the top 100 most powerful brands. So yeah. If you have an unknown brand, it's not going to work like that for you. But I think a lot of studies don't have that detail in them to say what type of level of sites, what was that. I think that's, for me, I'm not against studies. I just think there's a bit of lack of context there to make an informed decision. I mean, studies are great that you can say, you know, oh, we tested this big data set and this is what we found. But what does that actually look like? You know, how can I tell myself if that's going to relate to me, if there's a lack of context in them?
Yeah, I agree. I can tell you what I did for the last study we did when I was at SEMrush, which was detail our methodology and to also create a long section about the limitations, because my fear was exactly that. I've worked at agencies, I've worked with small businesses, and I know that the lower the level of, you know, knowledge and expertise, the more this kind of study can lead people to say, okay, so all we need now is links, for example, right? I've been there before, I've heard that. But so although it sounds counterintuitive, the limitations part was far longer, I think, than other section in the study. Basically to say, here's the context, here's the things we cannot study with this, here's the conclusions we cannot draw, here's how you should not look into it. And I'm hoping, like, the feedback I heard was mostly good in that, you know, yes, that made sense and it was good to do it. Of course, it can always come better, but that's why I also said that I always pay attention to the methodology. Because, and if the methodology is there, what, you know, people, users online, on social, what they should do is to push the brands and the companies publishing those studies to become more transparent about how they put them together. So, yes, we're not academia. I get that. But on the other hand, like, you know, if you're publishing a research piece, you have to be able to at least provide information around, like, your data collection, analysis, methodology, what is in there and what is not in there. So if it's not included, people should always push for that information to be there.
Yeah, for me, it's a simple case of, can I make an informed decision based on what this study says, yes or no?
I think not, unless it's a study about your own website and your competition and landscape. But I hope it can be a very good starting point for hypotheses and for jumping onto potential trends, right? So how does that impact your strategy? It's not a direct transfer. So the study said this is the trend, I'm going to do this. You need to be very inquisitive and very critical of it. But in terms of opening your eyes, in terms of new hypotheses you can test and new trends you might want to explore for your own business within your own context, yes, they can do a very good job.
Wonderful. Well, the time is rocking on. I want to ask you, is there anything we haven't spoken about so far that you really believe the audience needs to know?
No, I don't know what the audience needs to know, but the one thing I've always tried to apply where I work is I have not been able to see SEO, for example, being successful whenever it has worked in isolation. It can do for a bit, especially, you know, early stage technical SEO setup, and still you probably need developers then. But my kind of, you know, nudge to the world and the people listening to us is to sort of go a bit out of the box and think beyond just one channel or two channels and understand that what does organic visibility mean? What does brand visibility mean? Where do those different things meet? And try to build cases for businesses to try things. I think historically businesses have been very bad at testing things. But nowadays, especially, I feel this is where many things, you know, you can make or break them.
Wonderful. And what does the future hold for yourself?
You're catching me at a phase where the honest answer is I have no idea. But yeah, what I can say is like, I love content. I love brand. I love SEO. And I always love a good challenge, not a bad challenge, a good challenge, but a challenge. So I feel I'm going to be looking for that next challenge, but also maybe now that I have a bit more time, set up something of my own as well, which I've said to myself for years and I've never had the time.
Wonderful. And on that note, what conversations would you like to have with people and where can they find you?
Okay, they can find me for now mainly on LinkedIn. I'm in the process of building my own website, which I know is shameful, but I'm only just starting. So they can find me on LinkedIn with my name, Erica Varangoli, and the conversations can be any. I have tons of conversations with other people in the industry, just sanity checking or vetting ideas or discussing recent developments to people starting now or having businesses and asking like, oh, how did you do that? Or what would you suggest? And I'm more than happy to hear from people and what they do.
Wonderful. On that note, many, many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Unscripted SEO Interview Podcast with me, Mark A. Preston. Join us next time as I interview more top SEO professionals.